I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, it's good to be with you, and what would you like to cover today?
Well, during our time together, we've often touched upon negotiation skills, I guess mainly because they're so crucial to your success as a commercial property investor. And you've also said that negotiating is basically a game. What exactly do you mean by that?
Look, as you've probably gathered by now, to become a master negotiator, you need to learn to play by a clearly defined set of rules. And therefore, you're right, it is just like a game, any other game that has rules. But unlike most games, the other party in your negotiation is generally not acquainted with those rules. And therefore, to a large degree, you're able to predict and often control their responses to the various moves you're going to make throughout any negotiation. And I liken it to a game of chess. And those of you who play chess understand that you have what to call opening gambits. And you move in direction seeking a response from the other party. And the whole process is, well, the idea of what you're trying to do in a game of chess is corral the opponent's king into a position where it can't move anywhere but where you want it to go. And that's what it's all about. That's why I say it's very much a game as far as negotiating is concerned.
I like your chess analogy. And I imagine the success of your closing phase very much depends upon the choice and execution of your opening gambits.
Whatever you do at the very early on, and you've got to choose the appropriate opening gambits or opening plays that you make with the negotiation, but it will help reduce your risk and improve your probability for success going forward. Now, in actual fact, your opening gambits with a negotiation will invariably set the course for the entire negotiation. Now, as you'll appreciate as a chess player, the success of your closing phase will depend on how well you've actually executed your earlier gambits, both at the beginning and on the way through. So, in other words, each phase helps to build towards the next. Now, when you're starting out, you will always overstate your position, not to the point of being reckless, where you end up shooting yourself in the foot, but you overstate your position for the following reasons. Firstly, you might just pull it off. You might get them to agree to that or something close to it. Also, by overstating your position, you now have room to trade concessions. And what I mean by that is that, and we may have discussed this in an earlier podcast, but in all my time, the last 30 or 40 years in negotiating, I have never seen two parties' agendas as identical. Sure, they might have similar items on their list, but they have always been in a different order. And therefore, part of the success in negotiation is to find out A, what's on their list, and B, what order they're in. Because something that's at the top of the other party's list may be well down yours. And so you're able to trade concessions. In other words, you can trade them that, which is important to them, for something that is important to you, which, as far as their agenda is actually further down the list. So it's a matter of back and forth. But also, by opening and overstating your position, it also helps lower or raise, depending whether you're a buyer or seller, the perceived value in the seller or the buyer's mind as to what the property is actually worth. And it also creates a climate in which the other party can end up feeling like a winner, because if they can, in their mind, drag you back from your opening position, they feel that they've won some concessions. And even though they have given a lot of ground, they feel they've gained ground at the same time. However, I guess you probably then begs the question, by how much should I overstate my initial position? And, you know, that's where we need to start looking at your early opening gambits.
So maybe you could give our listeners a few examples.
Well, the first one I would like to tackle is what I call bracketing. Now, you see, when you buy, you determine your opening figure by pitching your target outcome by adopting the same dollar amount that your seller's figure is above your target outcome. In other words, if they're at $1 million and you think the property's worth $900, you would start at $800. In other words, there's the same amount below as they are above where you want to end up. So as far as price is concerned, it then forms a point of which or a range which you can end up at. Now, while there's no guarantee you're going to reach the midpoint, again, in the time I've been negotiating, it's taught me that your odds of doing so are extraordinarily high. And this highlights another key rule for you as a master negotiator, is that you always ensure that the other party starts their or states their position first. Only then do you bracket your target outcome with your opening proposal on price. And never allow the other party to trick you into starting your position first, because there is only one further benefit that you can gain from bracketing, and that is that as soon as the other party makes their initial response, that immediately tells you how big to make your first concession as you progress towards a final outcome. So if we continue with the earlier example, if the seller responds to your opening amount of $800 by reducing the asking price to, say, $950,000, then your response ought to be to come up to $850,000. And if their next move is to come to $925,000, then you would increase your figure to $875,000 all the time, keeping your targeted midpoint at the midpoint in the bracketed figures. Now, the one thing you do need to watch is becoming a little too predictable. However, we can cover the best way of overcoming the way of concessions in far more detail in a later podcast. But for now, let's just focus on the opening moves.
Okay, what happens next?
I've got to tell you, number one rule is never say yes to their first proposal, no matter how appealing it might be. And to better understand the psychology behind this principle, you need to perhaps have an understanding of the psychology, as I said, the thoughts that run through someone's mind when that happens. Just imagine this process, and we'll return to the earlier example. You've done a fair amount of homework on this particular commercial property, and you are comfortable that a figure of $900,000 is a realistic figure, realistic price to purchase it at. And remember, the asking price is $1 million. Now, you decide to gamble and say, look, let's just lowball the sellers with an opening proposal of $750,000. And to your absolute surprise, they say, we'll accept that offer. Now, tell me, what are the two thoughts that immediately race through your mind on hearing that? But if you're like most people, you'll probably think, gee, I probably could have bought it for less. Now, this has actually got nothing to do with price, purely the other party's response. And the next thought is there something wrong with the property? That may just be that the previous sale for the property fell through, or the seller simply has a deadline for refinancing to meet, otherwise they incur some extraordinarily high costs for refinancing, and then when they do sell it, unwinding the finance. In any event, either or both of these reactions leave you feeling somewhat uneasy. And as a result, you may decide to pull out of the deal for all the wrong reason. However, if you've sought the right upfront advice and you know the correct pricing for the property, and you've also learned from one of the earlier podcasts that you include due diligence as part of your offer to verify the integrity of the property, then you've got no reason why you should react that way, right? But you know what the rules are and you have had proper training. But if when someone offers an asking price, and even if it is at or slightly below what you were anticipating, again, you don't accept it straight away, because if you had that feeling of those two responses in your mind, they will have the same response too in the opposite direction. Maybe they should have asked more. And the problem is that until you actually get the contract executed, there's no deal. You've got to execute it, exchanged, and a deposit paid. So even though you might appear to reach agreement there and then, without a formal documented contract, they can change their mind. So remember, you're a master negotiator who plays only by the rules, and therefore you never allow your emotions to intrude upon any part of the negotiating process. However, you need to know about these two natural reactions that a buyer feels whenever a low offer is accepted unexpectedly, and in the reverse for a seller. And therefore, you need to ensure that you don't make the same mistake of accepting the first offer when you're on the selling side either. And equally, as a buyer, you never rush in and accept what you already know is a great deal being offered by the seller. And you need to always be prepared to haggle a little so the other party leaves feeling that they've pushed you pretty much to your limit. And now, then, you're in a position to make the deal stick.
Assuming they don't accept your initial proposal and respond by slightly reducing their asking price, how would you handle that?
Well, what I've done is actually keep the best till last. And hopefully you've grasped what I've been talking about here. And one of the best responses you can have, if they don't really give you much encouragement by reducing their asking price, is that you use a technique of what I call flinching. And what I'm about to give you is it sounds like a very innocent little expression, and yet you'll be simply amazed at how quickly it allows you to gain the upper hand. And after you've flinched at the other party's opening proposal, you just pause a moment and then you say, "You'll have to do better than that." Now, your response is, you're thinking, "That's just too simple." Yeah, look, I tell you, it's a real secret, but you say that and absolutely nothing more. In other words, when they give you either their opening position or the position after you've made where you're prepared to make an offer at, and then they come back, you sort of say, "You're going to have to do better than that." Now, as I said, you let them sweat on it. You don't respond in any way. You just wait for their response And sometimes it seems like an age in coming, but you've just got to wait for it. And invariably, the other party will actually make a concession well beyond what you might expect them to do. And then it's from there that you start negotiating. So, as I said, it sounds too simple, but it's terribly powerful.
And what if they were to use that same ploy on you?
Well, that's not a problem. As a master negotiator, you would just calmly respond with, exactly how much better than that do I need to do? And then again, it's you who sits waiting in silence for their reply. And in no time, you've again regained the upper hand. And what they will tell you quite often is something you might be quite unexpected. And again, it's from here the negotiation re-begins. I mean, look, it's not overly complicated. It is a game. You just have to understand the rules and have these responses and requests off pat so that it's just reflex. It's not something practiced or learned. It is initially. As they say, you've got to fake it till you make it. But, you know, once you get it as part of your ingrained box of tricks, then hopefully this will give you the insight and the control you need to handle the encounters as they arise during your negotiation. So it's something that you can practice. It's something that becomes second nature. And as I said, it's just like a chess game. You're positioning people or the other party by making moves and counter moves so that you have them exactly where you want them to be. And then you provide them maybe at the very end with what appears like a deal-saving proposition, which they grab with both hands because you've shown them the way. And basically, people are crying out to be led. You just have to show them the way you want them to go.
You're right. Negotiating really is just a game with moves and counter moves. And it's great to have someone with your experience provide such helpful insights. I'm sure our listeners have appreciated all of this.
Yeah, look, as I've said before, it's not overly complicated. You just need to understand and to learn the rules and then simply play by them.